Hello, listeners. This is another episode of Commander and Coffee. Quick intros. My name is Y.
I'm Cork.
Hey, it's Cypher.
Okay, so last week we had a cool episode talking about Shorokai. So we talked about draw pass, and this week we're going to go fast. We're talking about Ad-Nauz with Cypher.
Yeah, love me some Turbo Nauz. It's definitely one of my top strategies. So really, to kind of get into it, guys, today's topic is definitely all about speed, right? So most of you in the community probably know or have heard the term Turbo Nauz archetype before. We all know it's a well-known staple in CDH. The archetype was very popular way back in the early inception days of CDH. And then this little card got unbanned called Flash, kind of warped the format. A lot of newer listeners probably do remember a little bit of the Flash Hulk meta. Since its banning, though, we've definitely seen a resurgence of Turbo Nauz, thanks in part to a couple of newer printings, one of them being Thassa's Oracle, again, the boogeyman of the format, and then the latest new addition to the archetype, Cody Vociferous Codex, really added to the Turbo Nauz strategy. The take we're going to talk about today is a little different. Typically, Turbo Nauz strategies are kind of in the Grixis colors, using red and black for their rituals, plus blue for a little piece protection. I'm not looking to do that, to play that protection game today. I'm looking to run Black Red Rakdos, and I'm pairing it with Rograk, Son of Rogak, commonly referred to by us as Roger, and Tevishdot, Doom of Fools, another powerful Grixis commander, or mono black planeswalker commander that gives you a bit of play in the command zone there. So really leveraging the power of Roger in this one. Tevish is as a late game value engine, but typically with this deck, we're really trying to present a win actively between turns one and three is kind of when we want to be playing too. We don't really want to grind with this type of deck.
Wow, Cypher, that's a lot there. You know what doesn't go fast? Our brew today. We brewed that nice and slow today. We had a nice Gorilla Reserve from Grateful Roast Coffee. Nice fruity, nutty with a light hint of smokiness. It was absolutely delicious.
Yep, we took it out on a disc golf course, actually. I sipped it as I played, and Cork drank it on the way to the course. So, good morning. So, I think we kind of laid out the idea of what we're trying to do here, and I agree that a lot of the main points of Ad-Nauz are kind of well understood if you've been in the meta for a while. And if you don't know already, you'll definitely find out fast the more you play. Certainly the easiest way to learn is by doing in many cases. So for this deck in particular with Roger Tevish, there's, I guess, some unique angles that you take with playing this deck as opposed to other Ad-Nauz decks. What is the main plan of your deck right now, Cypher? I feel like this is kind of like a more of a linear Ad-Nauz strat.
The plan of the deck is to resolve a path spell as early as possible. One of the things for listeners, for those that want to get into the Turbo Nauz archetype, there's things that get you to your payoff spells, and then there's your payoff spells, right? So you have your rituals and your card draw that they're all kind of building that storm to get to that payoff spell. And in this case, we have several different payoff spells we'll talk about later, ad nauseum being one of the primary conditions. And one of the ways that makes this deck faster than some of the other Storm decks is the power of Rograk, Son of Rogoth, or Roger, for example. Roger being a zero mana commander that you can cast for free without even playing a land drop allows us to utilize some of the more powerful rituals that require sacrificing. So you get to play things like, you know, in this format, the Moxen are banned, right? Very powerful power 9 card, 0 mana rocks that tap for a colored mana. Well, Mox Amber is essentially a Mox Ruby in this deck, right? You draw that card on turn 1, you are 100% able to play that for free and generate a red mana off of it. So being able to do that into things like Calling the Weak, Infernal Plunge that we'll talk about, you have Paradise Mantles, Springleaf Drums, all of those quick, low-cost effects that help generate mana off of a zero mana commander really help you kind of push to that magic number of 5, 6, 7, sometimes even 8 mana that you may need in a single turn cycle in order to facilitate that powerful ad nauseum, peer into the abyss, etc. style of play.
Yeah, so you have your general suite of fast mana rocks that you see in other decks, your Sol Ring, your Mana Crypt, your Mox Opal. And then Roger allows you to play additional ones, such as the, like you were saying, Mox Amber, Infernal Plunge, Culling the Weak. You do the fast mana plan, but you do it with a couple extra cards added because of the nature of your commander.
Yes, we play the standard suite of fast mana, and then we ramp it up to 10 by adding like 15 more.
And you also have a late game way to abuse those effects with Tevish as well, because your plus two is making two tokens, which are amazing sacrifice outlets in the late game. If you've already sacrificed your Rograkh once, instead of paying two to recast and sacrifice, now you have some available sacrifice outlets in the late game if the game does go longer than expected.
Yeah, that's the power of our other commander, Tevish, right? Is you can't expect in every single game to cast a turn one ad nauseum, have it resolve, and then, you know, the world is your oyster from there. People unfortunately play blue, and people unfortunately don't want you to win every single game. I know it's ridiculous, but that's a fact of a CDH table. So in that case, having a five mana with very low mana requirements and only four and a black CMC commander in your command zone, Tevish Zod is so powerful. Another line in this deck list that we'll talk about, we get into in the kind of the stratagem, is just casting a turn one Tevish puts a lot of pressure on the table, right? If you're in first seat, you cast a turn one Tevish, that table is going to have a lot of trouble, because that thing can get out of hand very quickly, and then its ultimate is basically like casting a big ad nauseum, taking all of your opponent's commanders completely away from them, putting them on your side of the board. Is just a backbreaking issue. On top of the fact that with our Roger being a zero CMC commander, Tevish basically reads as a plus one draw three cards off of sacking our Roger, and that's something in this type of deck. I'm okay to cast Roger for six and sack him just to draw three, because, you know, drawing cards is so powerful, and being able to get three cards off of the guff whenever you want from sacking Roger is pretty great.
Yeah, it seems like you have a very clean label on each of your commanders. You have Rograkh with the Plan A label on it, and then we have Tevish with a very big Plan B label on it. If you can't do the main fast Adnaz combo, then you can really lean into the Tevish value.
Yep, and that's sort of the two plans, right? Plan A, storm off fast, get that Roger, get that rocking and rolling, and if it doesn't work, switch over to a Tevish Zod grind plan. I mean, and you'll see as we get through it, a lot of it's determined by pod, position at the table, and mulliganing. But, you know, some of the times you have all that mana and nothing to do with it. Well, Tevish Zod's a great resource to get out with all that mana and then start grinding some value. So kind of looking at some of the cards, I know we talked a lot about the various cards and kind of what we're doing, looking kind of at the win cons of the deck list. There are several really powerful ones. The first one being ad nauseum, like we talked about. You know, generally the mana requirements of this deck are pretty low to the ground. Not a lot's going on as far as average mana. So we're averaging about 1.38 without ad nauseum in our deck. So we're pretty low to the ground as much as we possibly can be. We do have some big expensive pass spells that hurt when we hit them, but genuinely, when you cast an ad nauseum on turn one, turn two, you're finding a win, or at least setting up for a win here. Our other big payoff spell is Peer into the Abyss, you know, ad nauseum number two in some cases. Really lets us draw about half of our deck and there can find a win. So they're the two kind of primary core win conditions of the deck list, I would say. Not true wins, but we'll facilitate those wins.
So, Cypher, we seem to have talked a lot about, you know, the stratagem of, you know, Tevish, Roger, ad nauseum, but what are some other strategies aside from ad nauseum?
So other ways that the deck can facilitate win cons outside of the ad nauseum peer, there are several clean lines. One of my other favorite cards, which is a pet card, it's seen in most Roger Silas decks. I'm very fan of it. Some people don't like it. Is Bolas's Citadel, which in this deck version of the deck list does facilitate a win off of Sensei's Divining Top and then Aetherflux Reservoir, which will let you just kind of do that manual storm and then machine gun laser beam everybody down. But Bolas's Citadel in and of itself is just a powerful card in the deck list. Being able to, you'll see as we talk, this deck is very light on lands. I think I'm on 26, and I think that might be too many as well, even for my taste. I think I want to be pretty low to the ground with this deck list. I really only want about one, maybe two lands in my hand, and I don't want to see another land the rest of the game. So really having that flexibility to pay life in order to cast more spells and generate that storm off of the top is very powerful. The other most expensive card we have in the deck list that we use as a win is Razaketh the Foul-Blooded. A lot of you may know Razaketh from other deck lists. It provides massive amounts of tutor chains, but as you know, it usually requires a creature sacrifice. Well, again, we have one of the best creatures to sacrifice in Rogue Rack, Zone of Rogoth, and our command zone, being that zero drop commander can come into play and for two life sacrifice and go and find us tutor chains from there. Those are our current large-scale win conditions as to the power plays, and all of those are really helping us dig into what I consider two really clean and really efficient win conditions, which is the dual caster twin flame combo. And I know it's dual caster twin flame, heat shimmer, saw in half, everything under the sun like that, any of that dual caster combo. It's our cheap creature, non-creature A and B combo, similar to blue decks playing Thassa's Oracle, Demonic Consultation. And then obviously we're in red, so we are going to utilize Underworld Breach to our advantage and be a breach strategy with several different ways to win in this deck, whether it be a Lion's Eye Diamond Wheel of Fortune combo, a Grinding Station plus any mana positive rocks. We are on Stitcher Supplier with Culling the Weak, which is another avenue to generate it. And then an avenue one card is not in the deck list, but another interesting way you can build it is Birgi, God of Storytelling, which we'll talk about in the ramp section, is a fantastic way to generate your red mana when you're storming off. But the Card Burning Inquiry, which is, for those that don't know, is a red sorcery that has every player draw three cards and then discard three cards at random. I'm not currently on that. I'm trying to test other things, but I've seen it in the past and other people have played it and they said it's been pretty successful. So all of those will help kind of facilitate wins to actually close out the game and win the game through there that we're currently rocking.
One of my favorite things about this deck in particular is its uniqueness. We always get the Storm decks with Grixis and stuff like that just goes, yeah, I'm going to mill my library and then play Thoracle and just win. Whereas this one, you got to have to think outside the box or you know, kind of chain together and actually use your brain, so to speak, and think about what your next move is, because each and every individual action changes the flowchart of your gameplay. It's less forgiving. I think that's the way I want to put it.
Correct. One of the scary things, and I'll touch on one small interaction pretty quickly here. I don't want to. We could spend an hour and a half talking about combos. Just in the way these combos interact is the biggest thing when you're building this type of deck list is you don't want dead cards, right? You're running a very tight and efficient package where, you know, if you're spending five mana to sack that Rogue Rack to draw three, the last thing you want to see is three cards that don't work well together. So you're really looking to maximize efficiency there. So like one of the win cons in the deck list we talked about, Dual Caster Twin Flame. So one of the cards that I'm waiting to come out for this deck list that everybody knows about is Saw in Half, right? The card that was spoiled that's in Unfinity that's going to eventually come out. Well, that card actually allows you to do some interesting instant speed wins with cards that are already in the deck list. So you're really just looking to upgrade efficiency. So we currently have things like Twin Flame and Heat Shimmer that are powerful, but they're sorcery speed effects. Saw in Half being an instant and being a... And giving us the second copy of Dualcaster really allows us to do interesting things where, you know, if somebody casts a Demonic Tutor, you're able to flash in that Dualcaster Mage and copy the Demonic Tutor and then saw in half the Dualcaster to get a copy of Demonic Tutor plus a copy of Saw in Half, which gets you Saw in Half looping, and then the Demonic Tutor gets you Lightning Bolt, and then you Lightning Bolt copy, and you know, all those things that when you watch somebody do it and your head spinning is just the practicing that you have to get into this deck and not having those dead or broken cards in, and then utilizing these cards not only for the combo but as value engines. There have been numerous times where I've just dual castered a counterspell or dual castered a tutor in order to facilitate another win because I had dual caster in my hand. So really you want your A and B's to have additional value on top of themselves into these decks. And that's why these particular win cons were chosen, because they are excellent when you pair them together and you win they literally say you win the game, but they are also phenomenal on their own at being able to, you know, twin flame a Dockside Extortionist to just push that extra mana to the pier, or, you know, acting as a bigger ritual than what it is, or, you know, using Razaketh to basically tutor every card out of your deck if you want to go down that road, or any of those lines are kind of where we're at.
I think the core of the conversation is that when you're playing red or black, when you're playing fewer colors, you are left with fewer tutors and fewer just general staples in general. So when you're mostly limited to black tutors in this deck, you really need to lean heavier on layering of combos, things that have that multi-function, that when you draw a piece, it has multi-uses.
Correct. And that's why I like this deck, because you have something, like I said, you have something like Thassa's Oracle. No one's casting Thassa's Oracle on their own, right? They're slamming that card with a Tainted Pact or a Demonic Consultation. Whereas here, I'm comfortable slamming any of my cards to generate value from them to facilitate another win later on down the line. And they all kind of...
It's nice when you have things like Breach where you can just rebuy your dual caster mage later in the game as well.
Correct. Yep. So those are kind of the combos. We're not going to go in too much detail on some of those. You know, make sure when you, if you're interested in this deck list, I do recommend, you know, digging into some of the primers and some of the research, and I'll post some of my notes in the deck list as well. Because there's like tons of Razaketh Tutor Chains and some, these aren't easy cast Thassa's Oracle, hold priority, cast Demonic Consultation lines. There's a lot more nuances behind them. Think of somewhere in between something like, if you guys know Anala, like the Anala 25 step chain to win the game. You're closer to that spectrum than you are just, you know, A plus B, I win kind of process there, which is really cool to see.
Sir, it's 20 step. Thank you very much.
Close enough.
And it is so much fun. Don't at me.
So I think this is the part of the podcast where we take our foot off the gas a little bit. Talk about interaction pieces, talk about what to do when there is something obstructing your primary win con, talking about removal and stack interactions. I think there's an inevitability. There's some reality checks that you have to make. Sometimes you have to answer problem permanence. What are some of the things that you're currently looking at in that line?
Unfortunately, I can't just go as fast as I want and win the game. I'm really looking for stacks pieces that are multi-use modal spells. So something like a Braid is very on the radar for me. Pieces of interaction is Shatter Skull Smashing, right? It's a dual modal land, so it can be a land if I need it to be, but it is also, again, a form of board wipe for, you know, creatures that I just don't want to see on the board that are causing me headaches. Other options some people may consider that aren't in the deck list. Deadly Relic's a good one with a zero mana commander. It's pretty free exile effect. The four mana is a little rough for an ad nauseum deck. Slaughter Pack's really good. The non-black clause is kind of annoying on that one there. But one I really wanted to touch on is, I'm playing Fire Covenant, but I highly don't recommend Deluge. While it's fantastic, having to pay, you know, large chunks of life is really powerful. With Fire Covenant, I'm not looking to remove the entire board. I want to kill the card that's causing me problems, which is typically two or three, and move on with my life. And I want to keep my board around if I need to for reasons. I'm not trying to completely reset the game. That's slowing me down more than it's helping me. So I'm not the biggest fan of Deluge in this particular archetype.
And I feel like if your opponent is going to resolve eight hate bears, then you already have quite an uphill battle to fight regardless.
Correct. Looking at stack interaction, some of the bread and butter things we have are Deflecting Swat. Obviously, again, really cheap commanders we're trying to get on the board, so free Deflecting Swats are always great. We're in red, so we're playing Pyroblast and Red Elemental Blast. And then we're in red with low mana value cards, so we are also going to try out Ricochet Trap as another great tool to help kind of alleviate that win. Some people are on Defense Grid. I'm going to go ahead and say I'm not on it right now. The reason being is because two mana is a lot. While it does sort of help lock out the win, if you do get stopped, you have no interaction and you are letting the table basically be free to run, because now everything else is gridded up for the game. I'm not designed to facilitate passing the turn with a Defense Grid, so I just don't want to be in that situation. I'd rather have the higher probability that if I do have to pass the turn because I got stopped, I can quickly rebuild and get back into my game plan than ensuring other players can piggyback off of my grid and do powerful things.
You talked about your speed limiters and the things that slow you down. What about your speed boosts?
Okay, so for ramp, I talked a lot about this. You know, I just want to bring up a couple of cards that are really powerful in the deck list. You know, on top of the Mox Ambers, Springleaf Drums, Calling the Weak, Plunges. Some of the neat ones in this deck list, we are playing Burnt Offering, which at first looks kind of weird, right? It's really bad with that zero mana Rugrak, but it's really good with Razaketh that generates you that eight mana. There's also an interesting line in this deck list that I'm testing out right now using it that facilitates an interesting win with it, a Reiterate, and a Lightning Bolt, all that are tutorable off of the Razaketh. So with three tutors, you're able to go and get your Burnt Offering, your Reiterate, and your Lightning Bolt. Then you Burnt Offering the Razaketh, Reiterate it, make eight mana, and keep running that cycle, generating infinite red mana, and then Lightning Bolt, and then start cycling Lightning Bolt around. So just another powerful way to make a whole bunch of mana out of nowhere.
And that functions because Burnt Offering, the sack is part of the cost, not the resolution, correct?
Correct. And then when you reiterate it, it would take the known information of the Razaketh and let you do the shenanigans of the eight mana, and then you get to go off to the chain. So really neat interactions there. Again, we're just really trying to maximize that. I have a copy spell and a mana ramp card as part of a win con in the deck list. That's just kind of the bread and butter to what we're trying to do here. Kind of looking at some single cards I wanted to talk through about. You know, I talked about some of the standard ones, but you may notice Mizzix Mastery in here, and I kind of didn't have a spot for this. But this is Peer into the Abyss number two. With those Entomb-style cards, if you Entomb or get a Peer into the Abyss in your graveyard through a wheel, Mizzix Mastery says three and a red, cast PETA from your graveyard. Right? So it heavily reduces the cost of PETA. It's a giant ramp spell that lets you cast PETA for little to no mana over itself. Very powerful effect into there. We're not looking to overload it. Don't even look at that text. It doesn't exist in this deck. It's four mana. Cast your PETA from your graveyard. You can also do Ad Nauseam, but PETA is the more fun one. Burgi, God of Storytelling, is another one. Just a phenomenal ramp engine. Its backside is also very, very powerful in this deck list. Don't be afraid to do five mana and then start using it to kind of turn through your deck. Your deck is full of zero and one cost cards. You're going to be able to cast them pretty reliably.
It's also a reason to hold on to some of your late game lands, just knowing that you have those discard outlets available as you go on with your game. Turning your fifth or sixth land or whatever it might be into more gas seems like a good line to be on.
Yeah, you really don't need to hit more than like three lands. Like if you're at five lands in play, something's gone wrong.
I arbitrarily say five, but yeah, no, you're correct, Cypher.
The last card that I kind of really wanted to talk about here that may confuse people is Kul'Dotha Rebirth, excuse me. Kul'Dotha Rebirth is a very interesting card in the deck list. You know, a lot of the times with Razaketh, the green decks are using Life Death as a reanimation spell slash a way to turn your lands into it. I don't have that luxury. But for one red mana and sacrificing a mana vault or a used up mana rock, I'm able to, one, feed my Underworld Breach and create three goblins that are sack fodder to either Tevish Zot, Razaketh, good blockers to protect Tevish if I'm trying to go for the ultimate strategy, whatever have. A very versatile card in and of itself. It's a very weird one, but it actually pulls a lot of weight into this deck list. It also helps facilitate if I can't cast my Roger due to Dranith, I can still kind of turn through some mana with my sack effect rituals. With the rebirth there, so it helps me get some creatures onto the board.
Yeah, and it also it's so unique. I mean, we actually played a couple of games with this, and it leads to this neat interaction of combos where people are just going, you what now? Like, you can completely win out of nowhere on, what was it, a little of Cypher, what was it, like, one cast of it and having a Razaketh down?
Yeah, it gets you three sacks, right? So from there, like I said, one of the combos was, you know, Burnt Offering, Reiterate, and Lightning Bolt, right? That's three cards. You get three goblins, right? You can also get Underworld Breach, Lion's Eye Diamond, and Wheel of Fortune off of it, right? So you can literally assemble any two card combo plus protection, or any three card combo off of just it with a Razaketh. So,
and the beauty of it is you get to sack them at your speed. So technically what you'd be able to do is sack one tutor for the Lion's Eye Diamond, crack the Lion's Eye Diamond, ditching your hand, then going and grabbing Underworld Breach, Wheel of Fortune, whatever, just to make sure that you could cast the rest of it. You know, if you could literally win off of, you know, What's the Dark Rite, Entomb, Animate Dead with an extra mana, cast the Call of Rebirth, and win from there.
Yep.
Yeah, that's what I like about decks like these, because I feel like your average opponent is going to expect the Adnaz, but then you get them with the left hook with all these funky combos, and that's the kind of magic that I like to play the most. You have a solid core of your deck, you have a solid core combo, but all of your middle ground cards, all of your lesser known fringe combos, I think are the ones that kind of put you over the top in a lot more pods than you might expect.
The balance to this deck list is if it reaches turn five, your advantage bar is non-existent at that point, right? You are climbing to try and skate back into this game. But otherwise, it's very unique in the fact that it runs so efficiently, right? We're not trying to grind. We're trying to win quickly. We have some grind engines in the deck list to facilitate that. But everything here is trying to run as efficiently as possible and maximize efficiency. And when you're looking at a deck list like this, and again, I'm testing some odd things and I'm trying some unique lines, and I think in Turbonage you have to build into yourself, but you have to always keep that in mind, is you are running on the needle's edge when you're trying to play these deck lists. You're not interested in what the opponents are doing. You're not interested in trying to stop their stuff. You're interested in your own game plan. You are selfish, you are self-centered, and that is what you want to do in this type of deck.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of your possible future upgrades are just come from the question, does this fulfill a similar role in my deck with a lower CMC?
Yep. If a new card comes out and it's 4 or 5 mana, I'm probably not interested in it. If a new card comes out at 1 mana, 2 mana, 0 mana, yes, I may be a little more inclined to take a look at it, but I'm just looking to lower my curve, right? The cards are doing what I want them to do. I just need to drop the curve or efficiency. Like, for example, I do want to swap Heat Shimmer out for Saw in Half when it comes out, because I'm at the same mana cost, but I'm going from sorcery speed to instant speed. And instead of being restrictive to have to win on my before my combat turn, I can now win outside of combat, right? And I can win instant speed over top of other combos. That's what I'm looking to do more with this, to improve it.
So on the whole combo area, is there any instant speed combos? Like, can you win over the top of somebody?
So absolutely. So one of the cleanest ones that we're talking about here is the Burnt Offering Reiterate combo. All of them being instant speed with a Razaketh in play, a black mana, 2 red mana, and 5 other mana. 4 other mana, excuse me. So 4 colorless mana, 2 red mana, and a black mana, you can assemble an instant speed win with the deck list by kind of chaining that combo together. And then one more sacrifice piece for the lightning bolt, I guess, would help too, technically. But yeah, either way, there's multiple lines you can get to that effect there by just using that, where you can win over top of anybody. Obviously, the big one I'm waiting for is Saw in Half. That combo there was kind of the reason I wanted to do it. Because being able to use somebody else's tutor to your advantage is always fun. I've tested a little bit with that card, and it's really fun when, you know, someone casts a demonic tutor and you're like, cool, in response, I'm going to dual caster Saw in Half, copy the demonic tutor, copy the dual caster, do that a couple of times, and then cast a lightning bolt in the middle of that chain, and then copy the lightning bolt now and kill you. Cool, you're dead. Your demonic tutor doesn't resolve. That was fun.
Yeah, I think once Saw in Half comes out, dual caster is going to be even more nutty than he is. It's almost reaching that territory of, you know, Thassa's Oracle, I win. Or Thoracle Console, I win.
I'm glad with such a tutor-rich format that we have that now there's more cards to keep those a little bit more honest. I mean, dual caster win the game isn't exactly what I'd call honest, but I mean things like Opposition Agent, I mean things like you're saying, your dual caster combo. People have to be more cognizant about firing off tutors. It's not just the straight upside cards that they once were.
So now that we talked about some combos and everything like that, can you see this setup, you know, in Roger Tevish being any other type of roles, like aside from fast combo? Can you see it as a stacks deck? Can you see it as a mid-range deck? I personally, like, it's in Rakdos. If you want to turn it into a stack stack, I think that Mogits would probably be a better stacks variant of it, or I'm sure there's probably one that I'm forgetting, but, you know, Mogits is the first one that pops in my mind.
Yeah, I mean, for this variant, people can prove me wrong. This is a fast combo deck through and through, but the commander, Roger Rograk, Roger kind of facilitates you to play fast, right? He's not, no one's trying to do fair things with a Roger in the command zone. So I don't think there's not a lot of grind potential. Tevish Zot's powerful. Don't get me wrong, right? The ultimate's great. The ultimate's good. But again, Tevish Zot, if you've played it or played against it, you guys know it's not a commander that comes down and everyone goes, it's just a Tevish, we'll let it alone. It's getting attacked. It's getting targeted. It's getting beaten up. People are trying to remove that card from the game. So the only really viable way, in my opinion, you're at all building this is this fast combo. I don't think there's wiggle room to transition to a stacks deck, transition to a control deck. You're not in blue. You're not in white. You just don't have those pieces. You're in full blown Rakdos. You are actively trying to just go.
There are some examples of Tevish in the command zone with slower decks, but I believe all of them are trying to add more colors to the deck. I know that Thrasios Tevish is one that has been seeing some play around the way.
Yeah, there's Tevish has partner pairs that allow to facilitate that strategy. You have the Thrasios deck, which, you know, tries to generate infinite mana. It's just a bread and butter good Soul Tie deck. You have Tevish Ishai, which is a Esper deck that's really trying to utilize like humility style effects, because Tevish actually makes 1/1s then, which is funny enough.
Yeah, it's flexible.
So he definitely has his flexibility. Rograkh is the card that's really holding that back. But I mean, that's the power level of what you want. I mean, for those listening, you might have also heard of Rograkh Silas Turbo Nah strategies. That's the Grixis variant of the deck list. Little slower, not trying to win as fast. Wins with a dumb fish as opposed to the fun dual caster or Aetherflux Reservoir combos. But no one cares about Silas Ren in that command zone. He's useless. It's Roger that's pulling the weight.
Having two castable commanders is a nice upside to your list, Cypher.
And not only that, it's not only if you go long with it, it's not just your commanders that you get to access to. You get rid of get access to everyone else's commanders too.
Yeah, like I said, I won a game the other day where I mulled down to like 5, which we'll get to mulligans in a second to hear people. I had all fast mana and nothing else going on, but I was fortunate enough that I was in first seat and I was able to resolve a turn 1 Tevish Zot. And nobody had creatures, so I was able to get that guy up to his ultimate. And then once I got the ultimate off, I took like Timna, Nigila. Like it was ridiculous. I just took their commanders, and the game was over at that point. Right, their decks lost their ability to play with their commanders and had to fight through all the synergies that their random commanders had paired with each other. So it was kind of gross.
Yeah, people don't. You know, I don't want to say the words that people don't respect the Tevish alt, but like they also don't realize how much everybody relies on their respective commanders. A lot of times, a lot of these C decks like Nigila, like Timna strategies, they're reliant on their commander for value for stuff. So what happens when the commander's not there? That's why Draenor's Magistrate seems to be such a boogeyman.
The last neat thing too that's fun for our listeners when you're playing Tevish is this is the big brain play that you'll get your table if they're not aware of it. Is his ultimate is obviously a minus 10, which is a lot, but he comes in at 4 and he goes up 2 if you start going through Thrall. So on average, you're looking at about 3 activations before you're ready to get the ultimate off. But what it says is it says gain control of all commanders, put all commanders from the command zone onto the battlefield under your control. The neat thing here is if you ult him at 10, he would go back to the command zone before this effect resolved, which would put in a brand new Tevish Zot into play because it includes your own commanders. So then you get your Roger, and then you sack your Roger, and you. So not only did you gain all of their commanders, you then sacked your Roger to draw 3 cards as well for minus 10. And it goes up to 5 now. You reset him to 5. It's absurd. Like it's such a game backbreaking engine if you can get to that point in the game. And
unnecessary secret text.
You go turn 1 Tevish, make 2 Thralls, and then they follow through by which I don't know why you would do that, because it says draw 3 cards on it, but you could. And then they drop a whole bunch of creatures in the board, and you're like, all right, well, you know, they're going to be beating up Tevish. It still has draw a card on it until they finally kill it, and they're not dealing you damage because they need to kill your Tevish in a deck that plays ad nauseum. So it's
I was going to say, and let's not forget, if they're playing to the board to answer your Planeswalker, they are not holding up as much removal or answers to an ad nauseam on the stack. So while they're answering your plan B, you can be gunning and waiting for your window to go ahead with your plan A.
Correct.
Tevish is the biggest red herring you can put on the board in many cases.
Yep. Just a couple of shout outs before we move on. Obviously, you know, this deck is my brew and our take on it, but Turbo Nas has been a very powerful archetype. So, you know, the Turbo Nas Discord, we're active community there, always looking for new and innovative ways to improve the archetype in all colors and all spectrums. As far as this version of the deck list is concerned, Roger Tevish, there are two primers on the database if you want to look at other variants. One is called Togstone by Only Adnaz, and then the other one is by Eisenhertz. It's Roger Tevish Turbo Storm, I believe, is the name of the deck list. Similar takes. We're all kind of running the similar engines. A few tech choices in there that are unique to the deck lists. I highly recommend you check them out. They both have primers on there that are very good. Kind of, they go into detail on the combo. So if you heard something you saw from here tonight, Dan, you want to go look at the full blown step by step guides. They're a great resource to go and to kind of take a look at those there and see what they're doing.
We talked about it. We heard about it. We spoke in length and quickly enough about it. Let's get to some hands.
Yeah, let's play some hands and see how they look like. So a couple of notes on these types of hands that I want to kind of shed some light on for our listeners here is they're very specific, and you'll probably see a hand and we'll talk about it and you'll say, oh my god, this is such a good hand, and I'll be like, this hand is garbage, don't keep this hand is terrible. Mulliganing aggressively is the biggest factor in this decklist. Win the game turn one, turn two, turn three at the latest. You do not have the luxury of saying, I got some spells, some lands, it's good. If your first or second sevens are not 100% keepable, throw them away. Mulliganing around five and four needs some restraint, but is typically required in this decklist. You want to see at least one payoff spell or cheap tutor, enough fast mana to cast the spells or tutors, and some form of cheap protection if possible. Some of the times that won't happen, but some of the times it does. So, you know, in your six or seven card hands, you really want two payoff spells and a tutor and a piece of interaction, and then enough fast mana to go off as early as possible. Five or four, one payoff spell or tutor, and then enough fast mana. And then three or lower is really when you're looking, and you do mulligan that low, is when you're really looking to get some refuel for the hand. So any wheel effects or get to that five mana to throw that Tevish Zod into play.
If you're looking to build this deck, buy a second pack of card sleeves.
Yeah, you are gonna shuffle a lot. Get ready for Carpal Tunnel. So, how we're going to do this today is I'll read off the hand. I'll let the rest of the group kind of talk through their thoughts, and then I'll kind of come in and
tell us we're wrong,
and tell them whether they're right or wrong, and go through the motions there. So, our first hand here is Deflecting SWAT, Demonic Tutor, Reiterate, Grinding Station, Fire Covenant, City of Traitors, and Polluted Delta.
This is a ship.
I kind of hate it.
Yep, this is a fair game. We have Demonic Tutor and Deflecting SWAT, which is the tutor and the protection, but there's no mana. You're playing fair magic. You're playing one land a turn. This does not do what we want. So our second seven is an Imperial Seal, a Talisman of Indulgence, a Grinding Station, an Aetherflux Reservoir, a Mountain, a Wheel of Misfortune, and a Graven Cairns.
This feels like a keepable four or five card hand because you have the quick Wheel of Misfortune. I feel like on being a second seven, you probably want to try for something better.
I heard there was no fast mana, and I went, nah, this is not fair. I mean, this is totally fair. Let's get it out of here.
You have Raven Cairns as a block source, so you don't even get to Imperial Seal on turn one. You have to do that on turn two.
You beat me to it. I was about to say, like, this hand's a ship, but it's kind of interesting because you have, like, the Imp Seal to go and get, like, a crypt or something like that to start getting you some fast mana, but, like, you can't do that until turn two because you have to play Mountain into Graven Cairn. So it's just not good. You're flipping this. All right, down to six. Springleaf Drum, Dark Ritual, Dragon's Rage Channeler, Ricochet Trap, Blood Pet, Graven Cairns, and a Red Elemental Blast.
Here we go with Cypher again, cheating, putting way too many Graven Cairns in his deck. This is a ship.
I almost like this because Roger does give you the color fixing via Springleaf Drum on turn one. Not only that, you have a line where you can get a Darcy in play, And then you have a Dark Writ, you have a Blood Pet, you have a lot of gas here. So I think if you do keep this hand, you're on like the Tevish line. But I guess this isn't really your plan A, but it does deploy an early Tevish potentially.
This looks like a plan Q to me, in all honesty.
So if this was a four, I would keep this. This is a fantastic four because in a four card, you go land Springleaf Drum, Roger, Blood Pet, and then on two you can Dark Ritual into Tevish, draw three to refuel your hand. But this is a five, I believe. So at five, it's actually pretty tough. This is a good one actually.
Maybe you keep this with like some maybe like some mid-range decks where the Tevish has a better game plan for it.
Is this not a six?
Is it? I thought this was a was
I'm pretty
this a
sure this
six?
is a
Oh, this is a
six.
six. Yeah, no, my apologies, listeners. If this is a six, you can do a better five. If this was a five, it would be questionable because that's a pretty decent four. But I think we're looking to mull this one as well. We'll go down to five.
I fear life, so I would keep this on a five. I agree.
That's the Turbo Nosh strategy. All right. So actually, I like this one. This is cool. So this is a Deflecting SWAT, Cabal Ritual, Peer into the Abyss, Badlands, Tainted Pact, Chromox, and a Culling the Weak.
Okay, so I was gonna say it doesn't quite count to peer into the abyss, and then I saw the last card being Culling of the Weak. I'm like, oh yeah, that counts.
Yeah, this is a good one.
I mean, this is a five. It is a turn one Tevish, if my math is correct.
Correct. You Roger, you Badlands, Chromox, Imprint, Tainted Pact, Culling the Weak, and that gives you a turn one Tevish, if that's where you want to be at.
It is worth noting that this functionally becomes a four card hand with the Chromox. You're knowing you have to pitch a card to Chromox here.
I personally would keep this one because it's a turn one Tevish, turn two replay Roger, and then be able to draw two cards
Yeah, being able
instantly.
to draw is a nice bonus, I think.
Three cards, I'm sorry.
Or you just like you make tokens with Tevish and then see what you draw the following turn. If you don't have anything better with your mana, you can redeploy Roger and then draw the extra card. And if you do have something to cast, you can just sacrifice one of your tokens and draw one fewer card.
I think we're all in agreement, though, that the two putbacks are going to be Cabal Ritual and Deflecting SWAT, though, right?
I would probably put back the Tainted Pact. I'd rather keep the ritual in my hand, because it's still a black pitch card to Mox, but if I hit something better where I can explode my mana even more, I would rather have the ritual in my hand than the Tainted Pact.
So then you would put the peer into the abyss under the Chromox then? Because remember, we're down to five. So like you're describing your keepable hand would be Badlands, Chromox, peer into the abyss, Cabal Ritual, and Culling the Weak.
Okay. Yeah. Cabal Ritual, Peer into the Badlands, Chromox, Culling the Weak. That would be my five, right? One, two, three, four, five. Yep.
So then,
Because
and then
with
I
your
would.
current line sacking your Roger, you don't really have Deflecting SWAT up at a time where you want it up. So you just kind of have to go for it.
Yeah, because you have it up after the Tevish resolves, but then the Tevish has to resolve, and then at that point, I don't really care about it at this point. So, yep.
So we kept it. Yay.
All right, second seven, Ricochet Trap, Entomb, Dragon's Rage Channeler, Marsh Flats, Peer into the Abyss, Lion's Eye Diamond, Lightning Bolt.
Too fair. Push it back.
Yeah, I agree. This hand is not very good. It's got a couple of neat pieces. It's got the Entomb, but like if the pier was like a Mizzix, that would be cool. Or if there was a reanimation spell in here, maybe. But this is not a good one. We're gonna mulligan this. This one we have a Chromox, a Snow Covered Mountain, a Rite of Flame, a Praetor's Grasp, Deflecting SWAT, Mox Opal, and a Peer into the Abyss.
This is close in my opinion because you don't have Metalcraft for the Mox Opal yet. You do have a Rite of Flame, but that's one of your smaller ritual effects. And I feel like Praetor's Grasp probably goes under the Chromox here, but the Praetor's Grasp could also be something like a Mana Crypt. I don't know if it's quite fast enough. If you're expecting an opponent to be on something like a Dark Ritual or a Culling of the Weak, maybe you keep this hand, knowing that the Praetor's Grasp can maybe get one of those fast rituals.
So I think this hand is kind of deceptive. It looks like it's like so good and stuff like that, but personally, I don't think it does anything. You are sitting there hoping and praying that you're going to hit another land drop because you don't even have Black Source in your hand except for Chrome Mox, and you got to get rid of two cards, one of which that could be, potentially be a win condition, and one of them that kind of is your win condition in PETA.
Yeah, overall, I think we can do better.
Yeah, this hand does nothing. This hand literally does... It looks like it does stuff. It doesn't do anything. This hand does the nothing. So this one... So this one's a Stitcher Supplier, a Wheel of Misfortune, a Mox Diamond, an Entomb, a Dragon's Rage Channeler, a Lotus Petal, and a Culling the Weak.
Mox Diamond, zero lands is hilarious.
Yeah.
Nope, put it back. Put it back, put it back, put it back.
All right, so this next hand we have is an Imperial Seal, a Ricochet Trap, a Reiterate, a Swamp, an Abrade, a Gamble, and a Blood Pet.
I don't even want to talk about this one. No.
This is our six, right? Is this our six?
No, this is our five.
Well, five. Ugh. We are on the wheel plan. This one could be good.
I see a Reanimator hand.
This one's a Wishclaw Talisman, an Arcane Signet, a Lion's Eye Diamond, an Animate Dead, an Entomb, a Dragon Rage Chandler, and a Polluted Delta.
I'm just going through in my head how this actually plays out here.
So this is a four. Correct.
Clearly, we're tossing the Signet back, we're tossing the Darcy back, and tossing like Wishclaw Talisman back, keeping LED, Animate Dead, and Tomb in the land.
I actually think that we keep the Polluted Delta, Darcy, and Tomb, and Animate Dead.
The toss back is tough. You're 100% keeping Animate Dead and Tomb, Polluted Delta. And then it kind of depends on the pod. If you can get away with it, Wishclaw is a great backup plan. And I like keeping Wishclaw in the sense that, like, if you hit the land off the top, right? You for the mana source off of the top to get the combo going. You Entomb Razaketh, and then you Animate Dead Razaketh, and you kind of get the ball going. But if they counter that and you don't have anything else, you're kind of flying blind. So Wishclaw is a great tool then to kind of help dig you back out and get you some gas to get your game plan going again. Because you can also get the LED. So the neatest thing with the Razaketh line is, so like if you sack, when you sack the Rograkh to the Razaketh, you go and you grab LED. Well, then you play the LED, crack the LED. You actually generate a mana because then you use two mana to recast the Razaketh, which lets you go and re-tutor again. So you get that second tutor to go and find other things and continue kind of pumping through the deck list depending on where you're at. So.
There's also a world maybe where you keep the turn one Darcy and you're abusing the Surveil triggers to, you know, kind of get the wheels spinning again. Because you have the Lion's Eye Diamond, you can be working toward a Tevish here.
Yeah, that was the other line I was looking at, right? Because you can go, you have if you ignore the rest of your hand, you have effectively four mana on your first turn, right? So,
yeah, because if you lead on Polluted Delta for Dragon's Rage Channeler, cast Lion's Eye Diamond and Surveil one. Not to mention that you're also drawing a card on turn one. So you're seeing some cards before your second draw step, because you also have the option of entombing on upkeep if you don't like your first Surveil trigger. So you can be seeing between first draw step, Surveil trigger draw step. You are looking at four cards before your second main phase one of the game. So that might be able to be a plan if you are on a four card hand.
Yeah, there's also a world too where you keep like the Darcy and the LED in the land too, and then you can kind of Wishclaw into an Underworld Breach, and that also sort of facilitates a win because Darcy will help kind of like, well, not a true win, but will help facilitate some surveils while you kind of dump your graveyard around trying to figure that out. Even Entomb, right? Because then if you can get the Entomb into the bin and recast it off of the Underworld Breach, then you can Entomb Wheel of Fortune and then go from there.
I'm now seeing that how nice of a band-aid Tevish can be in situations like this, where if you're able to get the rituals to just get Tevish out early, you keeping a four card hand kind of gets remedied. It puts you back in the game with one activation.
Yeah. The way I kind of look at this hand is exactly that. It's the plan is to get Tevish in play, but if I can hit it, then I have a clean interaction into Animate Dead to facilitate a win. There's also a weird slower line if you're really involved on the Tevish, where you can like entomb Bolas's Citadel and use Witchclaw to grab Goblin Welder and then try and weld that away into a Bolas's Citadel. Cheat that into play as well too. A little wonky, but neat interaction you can do there.
Yeah, good to know. I mean, these opening hands are fun. Let's do like another like what, two or three even, because I like the openers of this deck. They're very it's a fun thought exercise, especially for someone who hasn't played this archetype before, because like you were saying, Cypher, you are mulliganing very aggressively with this deck, and I feel like some people's preferences, like mine included, don't tend to gravitate toward decks who are going down to four card hands.
So this next hand, I'm gonna tell you guys, I love this hand. This hand is a Wooded Foothills, Chromox, Animate Dead, Feed the Swarm, Dark Ritual, Wheel of Fortune, and a Talisman of Indulgence.
Lots of options.
This hand is fantastic. It is a brand new hand with some mana on the board is what this hand is showcasing right now. Wooded Foothills for Badlands, Chromox, pitch, feed the swarm, cast Dark Ritual, cast Talisman of Indulgence, tap out, Wheel of Fortune, you have a brand new hand.
Yep, and disrupt your entire everybody else at the table, because a turn one Wheel of Fortune is amazing. So how about we do this? Let's imagine we did that. Let's draw our next seven with that.
And where are we leaving off? Is that mana floating or zero mana floating?
That would be zero mana. If you wanted to get them as much as you can into play. All right, so then if we did that, we would draw into Cabal Ritual, Blightstep Pathway, Reanimate, Lightning Bolt, Mana Vault, Mox Diamond, and Tomb.
Well, going a little bit then, you have a Mox Diamond with the land pitch.
Yep, so then you could generate, then you're generating two mana, untap, reanimate your Azaketh.
Or reanimate something that your 21 card, worth of opponents discarded. So that may be a line.
Yeah, people like to keep Dockside. People like to keep Dockside in their opening hands, and you just get a Dockside.
Yeah, that hand was beautiful. Like, I'll be honest with you, because not only that, you could entomb your end step and then reanimate on your turn with some backup there. Yeah, I like that a lot.
There's also the notion of just Mox Diamond, get Mana Vault in play to have even more mana, but yeah. Mana for days. All right, this next hand is Command Tower, Grim Monolith, Fire Covenant, Imperial Seal, Faithless Looting, Feed the Swarm, and Burgi. Yeah, looting's nice, not good. No, I'm not into turn one Faithless Looting. It's too fair. Turn one Imperial Seal is still not good enough for me. This next one is pretty great, actually. It's Talisman of Indulgence, Mox Amber, City of Traders, Blood Pet, Soul Ring, Lion's Eye Diamond, Gemstone Mine.
I see a lot of mana generation with no current payoffs. This feels like a Tevesh hand to me, but it seems like a very solid Tevesh hand.
Yeah, 100%. This is really nice.
Yeah, let's see. You can do...
You just go all in on the LED plan. I mean, you're pretty much out of cards anyway. You dump your hand and LED into Tevesh, possibly.
I don't even think you need to LED into Tevesh. If you go City of Traders, Soul Ring, you're floating three colorless. Amber makes the fourth with a red. Can you get that? I don't know if you can get a Talisman.
Depends if you want on turn one or turn two, I guess.
Yep, you have to LED. But you can still play out the entire hand minus a Blood Pet and a Gemstone Mine, or you can even play the Gemstone Mine if you don't want to play the City of Traders. And just get a Tevesh Zod into play. That seems pretty
great. Yeah, I'd probably keep this one.
I think it depends on where you're at the table, right? If you're in fourth seat, I don't know if I'm on board with a turn one Tevesh, depending on what the table did. Like, if the table put a whole bunch of creatures into play, turn one Tevesh is not the greatest if you're in fourth. But if you're in a higher seat order, this is pretty great.
I do like, just really quick, I do like the option of playing City of Traders with, in a vacuum with no other known information. I do like the choice of playing City of Traders because on the board you were putting out a Mox Amber, a Soul Ring, and a Talisman here. So you do have four mana worth of artifact mana already in play, plus your city. You're on six mana, which, like you were mentioning earlier, that's enough to do pretty much anything you want at that point. You may not need the second land drop.
Plus, there's also the notion, if anybody's played City of Traders, you tap it, float the two, and then play your land, so you generate that, you get that ramp that turn as well. This next one here is interesting. It's a Soul Ring, a Lion's Eye Diamond, Infernal Plunge, Faithless Looting, Exotic Orchard, Dark Ritual, and a Gemstone Mine.
Maybe I'm too cautious. If I were to keep this hand, I feel like I would want to start my turn with the Faithless Looting to see if I'm running out the LED, like which line I'm going for.
Yeah, this is a putback because, yeah, you get to draw. You get to see three additional cards. It's because, correct me if I'm wrong right here, basically the line, if kept this, would be Gemstone Mine, play Roger, Infernal Plunge Roger, cast the Soul Ring, cast the LED, cast the Faithless Looting, see where we're at from there.
That's the problem. You just said it. See where you're at from there, right? That's a tough sell for me.
Right.
I'm not the biggest fan of this one in particular. For that,
if that Dark Root was almost anything else, I might be more inclined to keep it.
Because again, Faithless Looting is a great discard effect if I'm trying to fuel my graveyard for something. But in this hand, like I'm trying to draw out of it, so I'm probably mulliganing this hand and trying.
I do like that you get to turn one Faithless Looting, and then worst case scenario, you do have turn one Tevish.
Yeah, both of those are true. The thing with this deck, though, is there's some of the times where you need to
do better than turn one Tevish.
Yes. Our mulligan, then, bringing us to six, would be a Diabolic Intent, a Goblin Welder, a Blood Crypt, a Mountain, a Ragavan, a Skirk Prospector, and a Polluted Delta.
This is what we call fair and balanced magic, as Richard Garfield intended. Ship it.
Yeah, it's tough. You do have Ragavan and stuff, which is cool to help kind of generate some mana, and you do have an intent, but like, there's a lot of lands in this hand.
I feel like if there was a faster way to have an Entomb online, the Goblin Welder hand is pretty cool, because you have a Ragavan to make a treasure to sacrifice.
Yep, I agree. All right, this next hand is down to five. Is a Deflecting Swat, a Bolas's Citadel, a Mana Crypt, an Imperial Seal, a Verdant Catacombs, a Wooded Foothills, and a Mizzix Mastery.
I feel like this is a hand with more payoffs than ways to get there.
So I think I see a line. It's going to sound a little weird, but hear me out. The five you keep is Mana Crypt, Imperial Seal, Verdant Catacombs, Wooded Foothills, Mizzix Mastery.
Correct. You MCL for Entomb and you win the game.
Yep. Okay, cool. I'm glad I'm on the same line. MCL for Peer into the Abyss, and then you get the turn two. What's it called? Brain just stopped.
You MCL for Entomb, and then.
Oh, it'd be turn three, Pina. Yeah, turn three, Pina.
It's turn three, but this does have a turn three, which is, again, the latest we want to be at, but still a win condition in the time frame we want to be, where you MCL for Entomb. But yeah, this is a turn three win off of going for an Entomb into a Pita for a Mizzix Mastery line there, which is pretty cool. So I would probably at five, I would keep this because I have everything I need to do that. Plus, depending on where I'm at the table, my Imperial Seal could be used for something else potentially. But I'm pretty clean cut. Looking forward to doing something like that.
How about before we leave Mr. Rogers' alternate universe neighborhood, give us one more cipher.
Yeah, now I'm having fun. I'm invested now. I don't think I'll ever build the deck. I just want to like look at opening hands.
That's the entire deck, to be fair. you look at your mulligan and you go, "Do I win? Okay, here's the turn cycle I win at."
The ad nauseam experience.
This one is a lot of Lion's Eye Diamonds in my hands today. That's interesting. Lion's Eye Diamonds, Stitcher Supplier, Wishclaw Talisman, Tainted Pact, Sulphurous Springs, Necromancy, and Ancient Tomb.
I want to keep it so bad, but I can't.
I need the Oracle text on Necromancy. Can you do some nonsense with like a Tainted Pact? Is there some nonsense you can do with resolving a Necromancy and then like LEDing a target in response with mana? Is there some line that I don't know about?
Not really, no.
I like where your head's at, but no.
This one's ick. This one is a Mox Diamond, a Blightstep Pathway, a Fire Covenant, a Scalding Tarn, a Rain of Filth, a Lightning Bolt, and a Final Fortune.
I got it.
You're seeing it? You can lose on turn one?
Yep, you can lose on turn one.
That's what we call Turbo Nas.
Yep, that's Turbo Loss, you mean.
Turbo Loss.
No, you could. No, you're not going to draw anything. It's going to win you the game in two draw steps, right? So, with this hand, but you can, in fact, Final Fortune on the first turn of the game. Let's do a new hand here. Next hand is Polluted Delta, Blightstep Pathway, Chrome Mox, Wishclaw Talisman, Snow-Covered Mountain, Bloodstained Mire, and a Mox Diamond.
How many cards are we on now?
I think we're on six.
It was six.
Yeah, like, best case scenario, you're looking for, like, a Wheel of Fortune for this. I mean, you already have, like, four lands in your opener. I feel like this is already a four or five card hand at best, so I think we ship lower.
If, I'll be honest with you, if we had another spell that we could put under the Chrome Mox, I might be inclined to keep this six.
If the mountain was like any other card,
yeah,
it would be interesting, because then you can power out, you can get three mana on turn one, which is a Wishclaw activation potentially, which would like find you like an Ad Nauseam, and then you untap to four, maybe five, and then you can kind of go from there potentially. It's tough though. It's probably a pitch though. I would pitch this because you just don't have, you have fast mana, but you don't have a lot of stuff to do with it. So going down to five, we have Polluted Delta, Grinding Station, Burnt Offering, Lotus Petal, Grim Monolith, Ricochet Trap, and Vampiric Tutor.
I wanted to keep it, but I don't think so.
I think there's a little bit too much shakiness here. The fact that you have to crack Lotus Petal to resolve Grim Monolith is a little bit awkward. And I don't think that this hand gets to Vamp Tutor for a ritual effect. I feel like it's looking for a payoff more.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, you have the Grinding Station and the Lotus Petal, but there's no clean way to get Breach into play effectively. Like, you can do it on turn three, potentially, with the Grim, but eh. Because if you keep Polluted Delta, Grinding Station, Lotus Petal, Grim Monolith, Vampiric Tutor, you vamp for Breach, then you cast the Grim, and then you have to cast the Grim pass, and then you can Grim into Breach Grinding Station, sack the Grim, and start milling yourself. So there kind of is a line there. It's the clunky line. It's not ideal, but
it does something.
There is a turn three win in this hand. Is what I was getting at with this. It's weird, but it does have a turn three win in the hand. Just awkward that your turn one is Polluted Delta pass because you're Vamp Tutoring, but not common in this deck. But it is a line that gets you there. All right, this will be one more. We'll mulligan because that's what the consensus was, and we'll see where we end up. This hand is a Praetor's Grasp, a Dark Ritual, an Infernal Plunge, a Fire Covenant, a Rite of Flame, a Snow Covered Mountain, and that Burnt Offering.
That is so much red mana.
Yeah, way too much red mana and too much time on our hands.
All right, then we move down to a Luxury Suite, Scalding Tarn, Collective Brutality, Ricochet Trap, Gamble, Jeweled Lotus, and a Final Fortune.
I think we're on, what, four? Three?
This is three.
I think on principle I'd have to keep this one here.
Well, there's our fast Tevish. Gamble becomes very bad on a three-card hand, so we're definitely not keeping the Gamble, notably.
You keep two lands, Jeweled Lotus, and then you resolve a turn two Tevish.
And hope for the best.
Yeah, you don't really want to mull lower than three, so that's kind of the hand there. So yeah, guys, that's an example. Hands were a little wonky. Moxfield decided to not be our friends today.
I mean, our early ones were sick.
Yeah, we had some really good ones earlier. So yeah, I recommend people to test out the Turbo Now strategy. Some of the times you may not even like the deck list, and it may be not be for you, it may be complicated, but it gives you some insight as to what your opponents are doing at the table when you're asking if everybody's good to go, and your Turbo Nas player is sitting there agonizing over their five card hand if it's keepable or not. That's why, because we're really, again, just trying to close out the game quickly as possible. You have to learn a lot with the deck list. Sometimes your deck hates you and you don't get there, and some of the times you go all in and your opponents stop you, and that's the game. You're dead in the water. But that's the fun of the deck list, right? You are trying to do unfair things as unfairly as possible with this deck list. So the give and take to not be the most broken deck in the format is some of the times you get got. But I will say that this deck is pretty resilient. Typically, when I'm playing, I find that the entire table has to play Archenemy to stop me. Which some of the times they're successful, some of the times they're not. And when they're successful, I'm out of the game. But I at least walk away with that game knowing it took three players sacrificing life, limb, and everything they possibly can to stop me from winning. And then they'll work on rebuilding and playing their game, and I'll just kind of, you know, do my thing.
Yeah, thank you for leading the discussion to our fast combo aficionado Cypher. Thank you to Grateful Roast for never making a bad coffee. They keep trying and they can't. It's always insanely good. Thank you, Cork, for making said coffee.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just going to say this now. Thanks, Cypher, for being so quickly, because I'm out of coffee.
All right, guys, well, that's the episode. Until next time, I'm Cypher.
I'm Y.
No, we were supposed to end on that. I'm Cork.
Peace, y'all.
Oh, bye.
That was the wrong button.
He just left this.